This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Talking about all the Yankees issues, and to be quite honest, we probably could go another full hour. We're not going to do that because I only want to be, you know, there's only such a level of depression you can have before you need a little bit of a fresh start. And not that I turned off the games, like I can't remember who the caller was saying that he turned off the games, but I can understand it. I don't condone it, but I can understand it. So let's we'll continue to take your phone calls on the Yankees if you want to make them. 1-800-919-ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. But there's other stuff going on. You had the Novak Djokovic thing yesterday, which was absolutely bizarre. So Novak Djokovic, who's the number one, but first off, you don't have to answer out loud, just in your own head. And be honest, because it's in your own head. Did you know the U.S. Open was going on? Honestly. Did you know the U.S. Open was going on, that it was taking place this year? Did you? I did, but just barely. Like, I didn't know what round it was. I didn't know who was left. But then I was watching, what was I watching yesterday? I was watching something, and all of a sudden, like, this news. Oh, I think I was looking at Twitter, and it was Novak Djokovic has been kicked out, disqualified from the U.S. Open for firing a ball at a lines judge. Now, the fact that I didn't know the U.S. Open was going on tells you my level of tennis knowledge. I thought that he hit the guy in the chair. I thought that he hit the referee. That's the referee, right? I thought he fired the ball at him, like, you know, in a fit of anger. And the first thing when I saw that tweet, I was like, I got to see some video of this. This sounds good, you know? And then I saw the video, and I'm going to be honest, it was not what it was built up to be. Let's put it that way. It was not nearly as shocking. Now, apparently that's the rule in tennis. That's a very weird way to get kicked out. Think of that. He's the number one seed of the tournament. Now, there's no fans there, but could you imagine if you bought tickets to the U.S. Open? You're sitting at the U.S. Open. You're taking in the day. It's a whole scene. You're with all the beautiful people. And you get tickets to see the number one seed. And I looked at it, the other people involved left in the tournament. I think yesterday was the fourth round, the quarterfinals. It's pretty late in the tournament, right? There's not that many matches left. And you get these tickets. You're sitting in some primo seats. And the number one seed gets kicked out for hitting a line judge with the ball. You know, and it wasn't like the person was like walking up in the stands. I mean, the person was in the field of play. Now, it's completely on him. And this just in, Joe West has also now kicked out Novak Djokovic for all future baseball games. If he wants to go to any baseball games, he's been thrown out by Joe West. I was going to say, I shouldn't say, I better not say it. Even though I'm only filling in for the next hour and a half, the show could end very early if I go the road that I was thinking about with Joe West. That mask, that needs to be a bigger mask for Joe West. Can I just say that? That is asking a lot of that mask. I'll just put it there. But of all the weird things to happen in 2020, and that is the rule, apparently, even accidentally, and it's pretty clear he did it accidentally, right? Like, he reacted quicker than the lines judge reacted. She didn't react at all. I guess the ball coming that, it didn't seem like it was moving that fast, but who am I to judge? My reaction time is not the best. But I thought that was a very, very odd story. And it's funny because I was actually looking like, when did this ever happen? Has this ever happened before? And I just never noticed it. The most incredible DQ, 2018. You think that the Novak Djokovic one was strong. Something called the Swiss Open, a guy by the name of Jan Marti. He was kicked out because he turned to his opponent's coach and told him, quote, you can put that up your butt. And he was disqualified for that. I don't know what he was referring to when he said that, but I don't know, the ball, the racket, something else, just, you know, out in the ether. But yeah, that was the weirdest one. Jan Marti still has that distinction, but Novak Djokovic, boy. And I thought it was funny because after, everybody's got to have an opinion, right? And my opinion is, the video did not match up in my mind's eye with what I thought I was going to be seeing. But immediately I saw that John McEnroe was criticizing Novak Djokovic. I thought, boy, that's rich. Seriously? The guy had, and look, he was angry. he was upset, right? But I don't think he was upset at the line judge. He was upset with himself, and he took it out. And he, look, if that's the rule, that's the rule. He deserves to get, you know, DQ'd. And now somebody is going to win the U.S. Open. That, let's be honest, if that did not happen, would have no shot of ever winning the U.S. None of the people that are left, I don't think, have ever won a major. All right, but anywho. But I saw John McEnroe criticize. That's kind of strange. A guy who's had a temporary split second of anger against screaming, spittle flying out of their screaming in people's faces. All right, 1-800-919-ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. Let's go back to the phone. Oh, no, I wanted to do the NBA. That's what I wanted to do. But does Tim want to talk about the Djokovic thing? I keep calling him Djokovic. I don't know why I'm doing that. But Novak Djokovic. Tim is in Manhattan. He obviously knows more tennis than I do. So let's go to Tim.
Hey, what do you say, my brother?
I'm good, man. What's up?
Hey, good, man. Hey, I'm no Djokovic fan. I can't even pronounce his name either. But I've been watching tennis my whole life. And I watched Johnny Mac throw his rage fits. Johnny Mac was more like Earl Weaver or Billy Martin throwing, you know, it was more drama. And he never threw a racket at somebody. He never.
I remember McEnroe like smashing stuff with his racket when he's sitting down, though. I mean, he didn't do it, you know.
He never threw it at the line judge. But my point is that Djokovic has a history. He's been warned. He's been penalized for similar actions. And then if you watch it yesterday, I watched it. I thought it was kind of overblown, too. But if you watch the professional athlete with his peripheral vision and you watch, he purposely knew that she was back there and showed complete disregard for her. And I think it sets a tone. You know, what if she really did get hurt? I don't think.
Oh, no. Look, Tim, I have no problem with him being, you know, that if that's the rule and everybody knows the rule and it seems like he's been warned several times about the rule and he took it too lightly and all those type of things, that's fine. I have no problem with him being kicked out. I did think that the, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the air in 2020, but I did feel like the reaction of the lines judge was a little over the top.
Like, no, she got shot by a cannon, right? Yeah.
I didn't
understand the overblown a little bit, but it was definitely.
Hey, look, that's the rule. Right. I have no problems with enforcing the rules if everybody knows the rules going in.
And everybody now knows the U.S. Open is happening.
There we go.
Great holiday.
You too, Tim. That got more attention than anything else that's happened at the U.S. Open. Like, if you didn't know the U.S. Open was happening before that, Djokovic hit somebody in the ball with a neck, boom, it's everywhere. Why couldn't he have done, the organizers are probably saying, why couldn't he have done this like in the first round? Then everybody, you know what? The U.S. Open's happening. Let me pop it on. All right, so it is Gordon Damer filling. I got sidetracked there. I apologize. I think it was Joe West's mask. That one really just threw me when I saw that. But let's get into the NBA, because the NBA has been fascinating. The playoffs have been fascinating. And, you know, much like the U.S. Open, whether you know it or not, it's starting to get down to the nitty-gritty. Right? You got a couple of big games tonight. You had a couple of big games yesterday. Lakers evening up their series at a game apiece. And everything that's happening with the Celtics and the Raptors series. It's all good stuff, right? You have the critical game five between the Celtics and Raptors. You have Nuggets and Clippers. Not as critical, but after the way that Kawhi played last time out, obviously need to bounce back. And the Lakers won last night. You know, I was actually rooting against the Lakers. How's this for really being conscious? I was rooting against the Lakers, and then over the weekend, I just happened to pop on the old FanDuel app, and apparently at some point, unbeknownst to me, I apparently put money on the Lakers to win the whole. I think it was during the restart. I put money on the Lakers, so now I am on Team Lakers, promo code Gordon, just in case you were wondering. But let's go to the Nets, because they made the big news in the last week. Hiring Steve Nash. I think he's set to be introduced. They said during the Yankee game on Tuesday. I get all my news during the Yankee games on YES. And it's an outside-the-box kind of hire. And I think it was only really surprising because he was never mentioned as a possibility anywhere. Like, if you had told someone Steve Nash is going to be a head coach at some point, I don't think that that's all that shocking. I think many people viewed him as a coach in waiting for a while. So the fact that he got a job, I don't think is all that shocking. It's the fact that there was not really a front runner for the Nets job. I know the Popovich name was out there, but it was never seemed like there was any real traction in that way. But then all of a sudden, Steve Nash gets the job. And, everybody seems like they're shocked. I think it's mostly because the Nets were able to keep this name under wraps, which is a big name. And they were able to get the guy that they apparently wanted and the guy that Kevin Durant clearly wanted. And, you know, for all the people who will say, well, you know, you're hiring this completely unknown, I think you have to look at it as when you build your team the way the Nets have built their team with two superstars at the controls. When you do that, you, and it's not that you drafted them and you've built this relationship, you're bringing them in. When you do that, you kind of turn over control of the team to those players to a large degree. Nobody can seriously make the argument that the Nets came up with this hire and presented it to Kevin Durant. I mean, this is, from all reports, this is his guy. He built a relationship while they were at the Warriors and all that type of stuff. And this is not a criticism of turning over your organization to star players. If you want star players, you want them to be fully engaged, right? And for the Nets, there's no time to waste. You know, a lot of times in sports, the windows of opportunity open and close and open again a lot quicker than you expect. The Nets' window of opportunity, we kind of know what it is, right? It's at least the next 2 years. That's pretty much maybe a third year. We'll see. But they have a very small window to get this done. So don't half measure it. Whatever you need, go out and do it. And I would think that there weren't really, I mean, there were other candidates, but there was not any other candidate outside of Popovich, which didn't really seem very realistic, that you said to yourself, boy, gotta get, that's the guy, 100%, that's the guy I definitely want. That's not the case. Steve Nash, while he is a bit of an unknown because he's never coached before, it seems as reasonable a hire as any other of the first-time coaches who have gotten a job. So, you know, they were actually talking, the new morning show, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, I think they were talking on Friday about Steve Nash, maybe it was Thursday, about what kind of job does Steve Nash walk into? Is this an easy job because he has the superstars and you would think has the support of those two superstars, so they're going to be fully engaged for him? Or is this a hard job because you walk in and you're expected to win right away, right? Again, the window of opportunity for the Nets to win a title is, you would think, the next 2 years, maybe the third year if everything goes according to plan. To me, I know that there are expectations walking in the door and the window of opportunity is a small one. There's no buildup, right? Like for most teams, when you hire a new coach and there's a new start, you kind of expect this progression from year to year to year. There's none of that. This year, they are expected to win. They're expected, you know, not this current year, the following year, whenever it starts. You are expected to be a good title-contending team right from jump. If you were to ask me, is this an easy job or a hard job, I don't even think, the question is not hard. It's easy, because this job is easy. No one is expected to win, per se, in his first year. I don't think that anybody is saying, if Steve Nash does not win this first year, well, then this move was a mistake. Now, does he have to get to maybe the conference finals? Does he have to make a deep playoff run? Yeah, I think. But I don't think anybody's going to crush him if they don't win a title or make the finals in the very first year. He has expectations, but that's certainly better than the alternative. I mean, which job do you think is harder? Taking over a team that's expected to go deep into the playoffs or one that has no realistic shot of making the playoffs in the final year, next season, whenever that does start? Do you think it's harder to take over a team that has talent, that has to be managed in some way, and that can have some problems? Or do you think it's more difficult to take over a team that has no talent or is still building its talent like the Knicks are with Tom Thibodeau? Assuming Kevin Durant and Kyrie are healthy, that's a great job. It ranks as, if you were to go around the NBA and all jobs are open once again, I would think the Nets job, maybe not, it's not number one or number two, but it's certainly in the top half. It's certainly in the top five or six. Even of the ones that are just open and have been open this year, I would think that the Nets and Sixers jobs are right at the top of the list. And which job would you rather have? Would you rather have the Nets job or the Sixers job? I think I'd rather have the Nets. The Nets seem like they have a path forward that is much more direct, and without health as obviously one of those factors, but is much more direct and does not have as many questions as the Sixers do. So also the idea that Steve Nash is a complete unknown, he is as a coach, but he's not a complete unknown to the players involved. You know, why would you risk it with a complete unknown? Because he's not an unknown to Kevin Durant, and I'm assuming Kyrie Irving. And I think that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have a better realization of what they think they need in a coach. So I don't think he's a complete unknown because he's not a complete unknown to them. And obviously they feel comfortable with him and they feel like he is going to get the most out of him. And again, when you build your team, like the Nets have decided to build their team, and it's not a criticism of them, many other teams, Knicks among them, would have been more than happy to build their team exactly the same way. But by landing those two guys, those two major stars, you got to kind of talk, you got to kind of turn it over to those guys and what they want to talk about. That's what's being discussed. That's what's being discussed. And in case you're wondering, hey, wait, where's Rick, Chris, and Dave? They are off today. It's Labor Day, people. They're taking a nice little spell, and certainly if you're a Yankee fan, you probably could use a little spell right now. But I am Gordon Damer, filling in for Rick, Chris, and Dave on this Labor Day. Hopefully you're having a nice relaxing day, nice calm day. And if you need something to calm you down, just take in Yankee at-bats, because there's no fire or brimstone or anything like that with those these days. But in case you're wondering, who's this Gordon Damer guy? Well, you might not have heard, but I am Michael K. Show Trivia Champion Gordon Damer, as well as Stump Rothenberg, living legend Gordon Damer, now effective, up to 87% accuracy. It feels like a Saturday, but it's not, so I can't improve on my numbers, which people, I mean, they're still buzzing about at the station. Still buzzing about. But 1-800-919-ESPN is the phone number, 1-800-919-3776. And I should remind you, obviously, Big Islander game tonight, fresh off their Game 7 dismantling of the Flyers. Now they move on to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they got a big Game 1 tonight against the Lightning, and you can hear that game right here on 98.7 FM ESPN New York with our coverage getting underway at 7 o'clock. And I want who do you think will score more, the Islanders or the Yankees today? Which one do you think happens? Let's hope it's the Yankees. I mean, look, the Islanders, you know, they play a very tight style of hockey, so they might not need to score all that many goals. But the Yankees, they need to start scoring some runs. So let's hope that they can actually do that. And you know what? Yesterday was actually a very big day, because yesterday was the final Sunday we will have. We hope. All things are subject to change. But the final Sunday we will have without NFL football until February. Oh my God, how does that sound? Just week in and week out of NFL football. I mean, you can't, as a sports fan, you can't feel like life is anywhere back to normal until you have some football to watch. And all things are looking good. There were times this year where you kind of wondered just what the situation would be come the opening week. But everything is onward and upward. You know, we got cut down day over the weekend. And I'll be honest, I'm actually, and now I'm not a Giant fan, I'm not a Jet fan, I'm a Dolphin fan, which is my own cross to bear. But I got to be honest, I'm actually intrigued by the Giants this year. I think they're far more interesting than they have been in quite some time. I think part of that is the Joe Judge factor, the fact that here's this guy, he's never been a head coach, certainly he's never been an NFL head coach before, and now his personality taking over this team that seems like, at least in terms of talent on offense, could put some things together, year two of Daniel Jones, and, you know, just the kind of unpredictability of what this season will be. You know, the preseason has been, you know, we talk about this all the time, this year has been unlike any other year. The preseason has certainly played that way out, right? No games, and you got to figure, you know, usually even week one, you know, with the new rules put in place and everything else, week one, week two, there's a lot of teams that are generally a little sloppy. You have to figure that this year, that it's going to be even more so, right? With no games played and this preseason being what it is with training camp and everything else. So I got to be honest, I'm more intrigued about the Giants than I've been in some time. Part of that has to do with the quarterback. Part of that has to do with the coach. And, you know, if you're looking for an exciting team, you need to be really good on one side of the ball. And I think the Giants have at least the potential on offense to be a pretty good team. Now, I don't think that they're going to win a whole bunch of games this year. I don't think that they're going to be a playoff team this year. But at least in terms of the personality of the coach and the fact that the quarterback looks like he's pointed in the right direction, it's certainly more exciting than we've had here in quite some time, at least the last 3-4 years, where the last 3 or 4 years, let's be honest, Giants season's been over basically since it began. Now, as far as the Jets, I know Jet fans, you know, there's complaints that, you know, they're not exactly surround. You know, this is year three with Sam Darnold and not really exactly surrounding him with talent. And, you know, people have been a little upset, I think, about Joe Douglas. You know, you see the injuries in camp and the injuries to the wide receivers. You know, with Jet fans, it's all about protecting Sam. Sam is the be-all and end-all. And I would just simply say for anyone who is feeling that way, right, you're going into this big year, you think, right, year three with the quarterback. That's the year you – sometimes it's year two, sometimes it's year three. The time is right, right? You usually by the time you get through year three, you kind of know what you have in your quarterback. There are exceptions to the rule. Drew Brees was an exception to the rule. Eli was an exception to the rule. But other than that, if you don't show it consistently by the end of year three, you usually never find that level of consistency. So this is a huge year moving forward for Sam Darnold, and you want to see that level of consistency. You see flashes at times, but then you see the other stuff too, and is there ever going to be that level of consistency year in and year out? Is he going to stay healthy for a full 16 games? Still unknown, right? But getting back to the Joe Douglas point, you hear all the time, right? If you take the wrong quarterback or you make the wrong coaching hire, or you do this thing wrong, you do that thing wrong, it sets your franchise back 3 years, or it sets your franchise back 5 years. Well, Mike Maccagnan, for all the talk about everything else, Mike McCagnon's horrible drafts after horrible drafts, that's what you're looking at. Like Joe Douglas, there's a reason why he wanted a 6-year contract, because he realized he can't do everything at once. And coming in the door, outside of quarterback, he basically had to do everything. So that's what, you know, horrible draft after horrible draft, you can say about this thing or that thing, that's what really sets your franchise back 5 years. So the problem is you're going to have almost, you know, moving forward is trying to build up the talent around the quarterback, which is going to take more than one offseason. So for all those that will point out, oh, you know, they're very, very weak at wide receiver, especially with the injuries, they're weak at defensive back. You know, this year offseason was about building up the talent base, building up the offensive line, and moving things in the right direction. I don't think it's about solving all the issues at once, that's for sure. The other problem you're going to have, we're talking about the quarterback, you know, this offense is not really built to put up big numbers, especially with the injuries and the depth. You know, you're looking more and more likely that you are going to have to be looking at Sam's next contract before you really know exactly for sure what you have. Unless he goes out this year and just plays out of his mind, which I don't think that I necessarily expect that. I expect improvement. I expect a big step forward. But do I know for sure that by the end of this year that I will know for sure 100% what I have in Sam Darnold? I don't know. And then you're going to be talking about a second contract when, you know, the first one, boy, time flies, right? Time flies. All right, 1-800-919-ESPN, 1-800-919-3776. Let's go out to the phones again. We'll go out to Dan is in Manhattan. Dan, what's going on, my man?
Gordon, how are you?
I'm good, man.
I just wanted to bring something up. It's been a kind of, as you know, an ongoing topic the last few weeks, and it's regarding the Yankees and all the injuries, and how are all these injuries going, and what's going on. And I have a theory, and I'm going to preface it because I know it could come across as a little, you know, controversial. You know, I'm not talking about an injury. I'm not talking about a torn ACL. I'm not talking about a broken arm or, God forbid, a concussion. Jim Brown, the immortal Jim Brown in the 80s, in an interview, you probably saw it, okay? When they asked him about it, when he played for 9 years, he never took off a down. He said, guys today accept the fact they can take downs off, okay? Remember Art Donovan for the Colts? He used to joke about broken legs. I mean, he was hysterical. Guys today, the biggest problem, you know, Yogi Berra played for his dinner. These guys got all the money in the world. Stanton is sitting on $330 million, okay? I get it with the injuries. But when you start talking about calf muscles and you start talking about the bumps and bruises, they accept the fact that it's every little thing. And the teams have so much an investment on these guys, they sit them down. for every little thing. And that's it. And again, you looked at these guys, you know probably better than I do. You looked at these guys in the 50s, in the 60s, broken arm, it didn't matter. They played the game. And guys today accept the fact that they can't, okay? I was an athlete for years. I had 30 broken bones before I was 31 years old, okay? I did what I had to do.
Dan, what sport did you play that you had 30 broken bones before?
It wasn't baseball. I'll leave it at that.
All right.
But I needed the money, so I did what I had to do. You understand?
Okay.
That's a little extreme. I get it. But you get my gist. There's clearly a difference between a player in the 50s and 60s and a player today where you're talking about tens of millions of dollars. And they just don't want to take the risk, and neither do the teams.
Right. Well, look, Dan, and thanks for the call. I think that there's a separation. And for me, there's a separation between, I think where the frustration comes is not just from the injuries, but from the resting of guys who are not hurt and are, you know, performing. And it seems like every other day somebody needs a day off, especially, you know, in a shortened baseball season. I would figure, I know in the past the Yankees have had this thing, you know, the grind of 162, and they're playing a lot of games in a short period of time. But I would think that you would kind of shy away from that resting of players, you know, the DJ LeMahieu resting, Glaber coming off the DL one day and resting the next day. I mean, it gets a little tiresome. And the point, I think the larger point is, it would be one thing. Like, I'm willing to give the team the benefit of the doubt. I'm willing to give the team when the results are there. And in the past, the results have been there, you know, winning 100 games and all that type of stuff. But I thought that the resting of players was to keep guys fresh and performing at their best, but also, seemingly, to keep them healthy. That has not been the case, and it's not the, you know, it'd be one thing if this is what everybody does. This is not what everybody does. Not every team is resting guys every other day like the Yankees do. So it's very, very frustrating, and I think that that's where my frustration comes in. Like Stanton, what is he out with right now? The hamstring? I think it's a hamstring that he's out with right now. But he's had a lot of leg issues, and you know, if the guy can't walk, he's not going to be able to perform. So I don't want him. Even if I had the ability to do it, or the team had the ability to do it, to go out there and try to perform when he's not capable of performing. So, you know, Paxton not being able to throw a ball right now because of his arm. I don't want guys going out there and then just doing it because they're getting paid, right? I want them to be able to go out there and perform at their best. But the resting of guys, that part does infuriate me. And when you see, you know, DJ LeMahieu react, I think he kind of reacts like this to everything. But when he was asked about, did you need a day off? No, I didn't need a day off. That is much more frustrating to me than anything else. And the Yankee lineup is not out as of yet. I thought the Yankees had an afternoon game. They don't play until 6:30 tonight. So that lineup that I saw earlier was not the actual lineup. Let's hope it resembles the actual lineup. And let's hope that even after having three hits yesterday, that Miguel Andujar is back in the lineup today. That at this point, if you're saying that, you know, it's getting to a crisis point, and I don't know necessarily that it's a crisis point yet. Again, I think people are getting a little carried away. You know, when things are going bad, it's easy to predict that they're just going to continue to go bad forever and ever and ever. And look, the Yankees have been bad for a while now. I think you could say they've almost been bad as long as they've been good. They're 21-19 on the season. Their run differential is down to +9, which I think it was, I want to say it was like +30 or +40 not that long ago when things seemed like they were going in the right direction. And usually if you have a run differential of about break even, that's generally what your record is. You know, if you look at the teams that, you know, have high run differentials, they're the best teams. It's not really all that revolutionary, right? The best team in baseball is the Dodgers. Their run differential is 98, and they're 30-12 on the season. Teams that are bad, like the Pirates, the only team that's really out of it in the National League, their run differential is -52, and they're 13-26. So the Yankees are playing like a .500 team, and that's almost where they are. Now, in terms of the playoffs, people are, I think, getting a little carried away. They're definitely going to make the playoffs. They're going to be overtaken. You know, the Orioles, even despite taking 3 of 4, are a below .500 team. The Tigers are a below .500 team. So for everybody getting all worked up about somebody's going to overtake them, the Yankees are putting themselves in that position right now because of how poorly they're playing. I don't think that over the next 20 games, the Yankees are going to win 5 or 6 of them. I expect them to pick things up here before too long, and hopefully it's over the next few days, because the one aspect of the schedule that it jumps out at you is all the games they still have to play. They've not played the Blue Jays at all, so they still have 10 games left in this season, right? They played 40 games, so they got 20 left, and half of them are against the Blue Jays. So if the Yankees want to start to pick things up and start to make people feel better about their you know, chances come October, or chances of being in October, playing well here over the next few days against the Blue Jays in Buffalo will certainly make you feel that way. And I think that, you know, we kind of opened the show with the Yankees, and that's been a major focus, is that, you know, there's things that you can change and there's things that you can't change. And the last caller kind of brought up about the injuries. For whatever reason, the Yankees just continue to have them. You know, Brian Cashman saying that when you change the training schedule, you change your medical whatever outlook, that sometimes you have more injuries when you first make that change. Well, at least going according to plan there, because that has certainly been the case. I don't know if they've had more injuries than they had last year, but they certainly haven't had any fewer. And it's still the same guys who are, you know, generally getting hurt more times than not. It's Stanton. It's Judge. Glaber's been dinged up. It doesn't look like Urshela is going to be out too long, but Paxton's been a guy, even before the Yankees got him, not generally a guy that has had major stuff where he's missed full seasons, but he's a guy that just never seems to be healthy throughout the course of a season. And even in a game, even in a season, excuse me, when you only have 60 games, you'd like to think that he would have been able to stay healthy. That has not been the case. Now, again, we focus primarily on the offense because that's the primary problem, but that's not the only problem. The bullpen, which has not been good. You know, there was a lot of games here over this 20-game stretch the Yankees had leads in, and the bullpen was not, it has not been reliable. Every aspect of the team has been pretty much not as good as it's been in years past. And the Yankees have a very short period of time here to try to figure out, you know, 20 games to get things pointed in the right direction. And I don't know how many of those areas they can get pointed in the right direction in over that short period of time, especially the health aspect. It seems like both Stanton and Judge will be back at some point before the playoffs roll around. You hope it's while, you know, things have turned around enough so that the Yankees know for sure they will be in the playoffs. I still think that they are virtually a lock, because I just can't see the Orioles and the Tigers playing at a clip where they are playing well over 500. And even as bad as the, you know, you'd like to think this is rock bottom. Every time you think that it's rock bottom, the Yankees find a new way to go a little lower, and losing 3 or 4 to the Orioles, that's certainly one of them. That is certainly one of them. You know, as for the Mets, they've kind of played themselves back into playoff contention. I guess I should spend a minute or two, because with the National League, the best thing that the Mets have going for them is the thing that everybody in the National League has going for them, is that you basically can't play your way out of contention. If you have one solid, good week where you run off 5 or 6 wins, you're basically putting yourself right back into contention. So the Mets, who've been kind of, you know, left for dead after the way they lost those games to the Yankees the last 3 games, they've had this one good week, right? Like, you'd like to see them be able to get another win against the Phillies, who seemed like they were certainly trending in the right direction. So if the Mets can have one of these good weeks, they can certainly put themselves smack dab in the middle. And with the unpredictability of this year and the baseball playoffs in general, you know, get in the tournament and take your chances. I'm not saying that the Mets are going to go on some deep run, but they need to have one good week to put themselves in contention to be in that tournament. The problem is, at this point, you only have 3 weeks to choose from, right? It's not like it's all wide open like it ordinarily would be. And the other problem is that they have a stretch of games. I think they play the Orioles next, is it? But then they get Toronto, who's played well, Philly, who they've done well against right now, but Philly is a good playoff contending team. The Rays, they have them on the schedule still. They still have the Braves left. So it seems like finally, like after waiting and waiting and waiting for the Mets finally to be hitting, and that's the strength of their team. It is their lineup. And they're finally starting to hit. Alonso's starting to finally get going after a very cold stretch that seemed like it was impacting his defense. Conforto has really kind of broken out and been the player you expect. Cano has had a very solid season when he's been in the lineup. So things seem like they're pointing in the right direction for the Mets. The problem is, you get all these runs yesterday with Jacob DeGrom. It's not about the days that Jacob DeGrom pitches. It's about all the other days. Because right now their rotation, it seems pretty clear who the rotation should be. The young kid, what is his name, Peterson, and Seth Lugo, and DeGrom. Those are the three starters, the Mets' best three starters, and those should be the guys that they're riding heavily if they really want to make the playoffs this year.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.